Testing one, two.
Good morning. Today is the Ides of March, which when you get a history professor, a gavel, you get a history lesson. In 44 BC, Julius Caesar was assassinated on this day, and it's been known forevermore as the Ides of March. I won't quote Mark Antony's funeral speech because I want to hear from you. Besides, I've already quoted it once this morning. Mr. Wilson, why don't you give us an outline of how we're going to proceed?
So can I ask a question, sir? What calendar were they using, the Gregorian or the...
I think it was Gregorian.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, we have a number of people signed up, somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 55 to 60, which probably means we're not going to get to everyone before in the next hour and a little bit. So there's a timer for 2 minutes. We'll keep track of it. It's there, and also on the screen at the witness table. There will be a beep when your time is up. We're going to try to keep to it just because of the number of people. If we don't get to folks today, we will have another day next week sometime, which we'll probably announce after tomorrow's meeting. It will probably be Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, so keep your eyes on the calendar for it. And we'll call up people in panels of three. We'll try to keep, if there's a panel on here, we'll try to keep to it. At some point, there's a few people that are at 100 miles or more. They will be called up for sure. If we don't get to them about halfway through, we'll make sure that we'll get to those folks at that point since they have driven that far. So do you want to announce or call up folks, or I can?
Sure. We'll start with Sue Miller, Rose Ball, and Sarah Roots Waite. Come on up. Good morning. Thank you for coming. Go ahead and proceed.
Yes, thank you. Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and committee members. My name is Sue Miller. I am the chair of the Early Learning Council and appreciate having a very short time to talk to you. You've heard from David Mandel over the last couple of weeks as far as the programs that we, some of which we administer and others in early learning that other agencies administer. We really look at those as a portfolio of investments, providing wraparound services for families with young children. It goes from home visiting to quality child care, and certainly a lot of focus on the pre-kindergarten, preschool programs. Early learning hubs are a really critical part of the system, trying to develop this new integrated network system with the health authority and also DHS, as well as K-12, working with traditional early learning programs. And the council membership reflects that because we have the directors of all four of those agencies sitting on the Early Learning Council. So it really is the focus which the legislature has set up in previous sessions, trying to find new ways to provide really great services. And all the silos have provided wonderful services in the past. Now the effort is to integrate those so that we can provide more services to more families and have them be more productive. So we've come a long way, as you all know, because many of you have gone through the transitions with us, but we also have a long way to go, so we will appreciate your continued support of early learning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue, and I think I didn't open a public hearing on 5516. Am I supposed to do that?
Yes, you are.
I did it. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Sarah from Yonkala Preschool Promise Program. And I'm more just here to advocate for the program itself. I have a daughter who's in preschool in Yonkala. And I just want to express that this program does more than can be put on paper or, you know, into words. My daughter started, obviously, at the beginning of the year. And the leaps and bounds that she's made with the kids in her community, the adults in her community, all of the different programs that are offered. They provide childcare, which makes it super easy. I don't have a license due to medical reasons. And so with this program, it kind of opens up more windows for me to be able to be involved. A lot of the staff members and everything make different arrangements for parents so that they can be there and be with the children. And this community goes without so much that this program is like bringing all of us together, making us a family, and giving our kids the opportunity to kind of take with them into the next year and the following. And it can't just stop with this one little program. There's so much more to be offered. And I just want to thank you guys for continuing to work with these programs and giving us these opportunities, because without them, we would have to ship our kids 30 to 40 miles. And I can't do that. If an emergency happened, I would not be able to be there for my child. And that is my main concern. I have 5 children, and it doesn't just happen in a blink of an eye. I can't just drop everything I'm doing and head 40 miles out. So without this program, my child would not be in preschool. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner. My name is Rose Ball. I'm from Warm Springs. I have a son that receives early intervention, early childhood special education services. It has really helped him build effective communication skills. It has really helped boost his little confidence. Before he received the services, a lot of people couldn't understand anything he said, and it really hurt his little ego. So he has come a long ways. He still is receiving services. So with his new skills, he likes to enjoy. He actually likes to go to school now, and he's in Head Start. He enjoys going to school now, and he's able to be understood by most people now. People still have a hard time understanding him, but he's still receiving the services. So I'm hoping within the next few years or so that he will be able to be understood by everyone. So today I'm here to advocate for more funding for the EIECSE program. It has really helped my son in many ways. He's not my first child to go through the program. I have 2 other children that have went through the program as well. At this time, I feel like, because I live in Warm Springs, it is a rural community, we have less access to these services. And so he was only seen a speech therapist a few 30 minutes, 2 times a month, which I felt like it wasn't really helping him as much. And so we decided to take him to Madras, which is an hour round trip, and to receive more services. And before that, we was actually taking him to Redmond, but I know many parents don't have this opportunity, because I had private health insurance through my job, so I was able to give him these additional services, whereas many families in my area, jobs are scarce, so a lot of parents don't have that opportunity.
So. Thank you very much, all of you. And who's going to be next? Bill Thomas, Sarah Woodley, and Lupe Gamos.
Co-chairs and committee members, I am Sarah Brentano Woodley from Sublimity, Oregon. I'm here to advocate for EIECSE service levels. My beautiful, brilliantly blue-eyed 6-year-old daughter, Caroline, experiences Creedy-Shaw syndrome as well as autism spectrum disorder. She has a mountain of obstacles that she faces daily, and she's in the ODE's high need category, of which less than 4% of children receive the service level that is required for benefit. From ages 3 to 5, Caroline received only 5.5 hours of preschool per week. With these limited service levels, her IFSP, Individualized Family Service Plan, goals were going unmet and repeated year after year. New skills weren't being learned. She was regressing in areas. She was denied access to typical peers and being set up for failure in future classrooms. I can't tell you how many IFSP meetings I cried through, begging for more hours and services, and was denied time after time. Caroline deserved the same educational opportunities as any of her peers, and she wasn't getting them. In January of 2016, feeling desperate and hopeless and frustrated, I wrote a letter to the superintendent of the Willamette ESD and requested that Caroline's services be immediately brought to the standard level set forth by the ODE. My letter included the enormous list of repetitive and or reduced goals that Caroline was working on since the beginning of her preschool career, her limited and blatantly insufficient service level, and a request that her tuition be paid at a typical preschool during the days and times that she wasn't allowed to access her specialized preschool. On Wednesday, February 17th, 2016, was Caroline's first day at Fruitland Elementary in Salem. That tripled her service level and gave her access to typical peers, and the dual enrollment scenario brought Caroline's level to the standard in which she could develop necessary skills, build stamina, and socialize with typically developing peers. Our sweet Caroline will accomplish amazing things in her life, and children with the highest level of need receive the least amount of support. I urge you to fund early childhood special ed at the level recommended by the ODE based on Caroline's wonderful increase of skills that she received by getting those services. Thank you.
For your testimony.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, members of the committee. My name is William Thomas. I'm the director of Early Learning Washington County in Hillsborough. I've also submitted testimony from the chair of our Parent Advisory Council, Luis Nava. I want to make 3 points this morning. One is that the hubs that have been created by the acts of the legislature are very, very different than the old Commission on Children and Families. They're more effective. There's broader representation as a result of the mandated groups of business, early childhood, K-12 education, health, human services that are part of the governance structures. Our particular governance structure also has parents and culturally specific organizations, and our particular hub has a strong commitment to community and family engagement, ensuring that family voice is part of all of our decisions, which is why we have an equity council and a parent advisory council. In addition, we have a strong commitment to an equity lens. It is really part of the landscape of all of the early learning hubs, and we have identified the 25 highest need elementary school catchment areas in Washington County out of 79 elementary schools, which represent communities where there are majorities of children of color and low-income children. These are two of the priority populations that we've identified that we want to focus our services on because they're limited resources and services, and so we have focused most of our resources to those 25 high needs elementary school catchment areas. Finally, on the back of the testimony, I've listed a number of the accomplishments of our hub focusing on family health and stability and school readiness and success. And without the funds that are available and appropriated in Senate Bill 5516 and the funds that we've been able to leverage, it would be impossible to support these initiatives. So I support or urge you to fully fund the governor's recommended budget for the $104 million in early learning programs that is in Senate Bill 5516. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Okay. I'm Guadalupe Moreno, and I'm on behalf of a mom whose child was born with a heart condition and received services from early childhood care in Eugene. And the mom, this child, after he was born, he had a stroke and was feeding with a E-tube and a tracheotomy. Without these services from early childhood cares, he will not be able to flourish. And she's really, she wants to thank early childhood cares are the group that she was able to receive all those services because now, well, at the age of two, he was able to start walking. And now he can start, he is attending a preschool for 4 days a day and be interacting with children. Mom, without the services of early childhood cares, she didn't have, at the beginning, she didn't have any hopes. And now she see a light, for the future of the boy.
Thank you so much. Thank all of you. And the next panel will be from the youth development side, Lisa Lee, Delilah Wagner, and Zuma Romero. And then on deck The next panel will be Abigail Wells, Maoli Prado, and Chris Vogel. Please, go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe, Smith Warner, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Lee. I'm a PreventNet site coordinator serving at a middle school in Clackamas County through the Youth Development Council funds. I would just like to share a story with you today about a kid that I've worked with. Her name is Jill, so I changed her name for this testimony. I met Jill at the beginning of last school year. She was starting sixth grade. I came to understand how bright, funny, engaging, and kind she was through the brief check-ins we would have. One afternoon, she grabbed her lunch and approached me, asking to eat lunch down in my room. I thought that it would be another great opportunity to connect with her. These lunch talks started to become a pattern, and through them, I discovered the struggles she dealt with on a daily basis. The hardships her family experienced over the years, transitioning between living with her mom out on the streets and being picked up by her dad and brought back to live with him, all while trying to get to school so she could have breakfast and lunch. She told me that her mom was addicted to drugs, and she wasn't allowed to see her unless her dad supervised the visits. Her siblings, who are older, have gotten into drugs and become pregnant at an early age. She told me that her grandparents are alcoholics, and they tell her what a burden she is to them. She shared with me her goals, beliefs, and life plans that she wants in her future. She hadn't shared that information with many adults outside her family. She wants to do better than the examples she's been given at home. Throughout the school year, I helped connect Dad with a variety of resources and worked hard to connect Jill to counseling and after-school activities. She was in desperate need of glasses, and with the help of a great resource, we were able to get her an eye exam and new glasses so she can do her homework and be able to see better in class. So I was lucky enough to be that adult that she came to count on needs to be met. I understand that this is just one story, but there are many, many stories of adolescents like Jill all across the state of Oregon. The Youth Development Council provides funding to 36 counties and 9 tribes, and so I want to emphasize how vital it is that there may be no cuts to the Youth Development Council's budget. Oregon's most vulnerable students will be the ones to suffer from the lack of a relationship with someone who can provide that extra caring adult. As much as I play a role in these students' lives, all of you co-chairs and committee play an important role as well. Your support of increasing or maintaining current levels of funding for the Youth Development Council programs helps us to support young people like Jill, as well as youth all across the state of Oregon. Thank you for your time. I also brought 2 students with me today that I have the pleasure of working with. So,
thank you.
To speak.
Go ahead.
Co-chair Monroe and Warner and committee. I'm Suleyma Romero, and I'm currently a student at OCHS, and this program really helped me a lot, and I just don't get why it's being cut. Like, all these great programs are being cut that actually help youth, and it's like, if you want to help youth, you would keep them, and it's like, if you're cutting all the programs that help youth, they're not going to go nowhere, and you keep the ones that they just sit around, they don't pay attention, and they just don't get anywhere. It's just not fair. It's like, keep these great programs to help students and kids and youth who want to be helped.
Good, thank you. Please.
I have lived here since I was 7 in Oregon.
Yeah, just tell us your name, please.
My name is Delilah Wagner.
Thank you.
I grew up in St. Louis, and I moved here with my mother and father, and we were homeless for that summer, and we were living in campgrounds, and we've since then found a home, but we've gotten evicted recently, and we're homeless, currently living in a trailer on the side of our friend's yard, and Lisa has helped me with a lot of stuff recently. My mom doesn't have a car, so, and the buses don't run out to where we're living, and she has provided me with bus passes to get to and from school, and to get places I need to get for homework and studying, etc. And she has been a very great support to come to when I'm having a bad day. And she's just altogether helped me a lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Abigail Maoli Prado and Chris Vogel.
Then following them will be Ashley Oakley, Mary Ellen Glynn, and Pedro Gomez, Jr.
Good morning. Why don't you go ahead?
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Vogel with the League of Women Voters. You have two testimonies that I've submitted, one for support of early learning, the other one for the support of the youth development programs. I appreciate very much what this legislature has done over the last many years in building an early learning system. And funding it, and I follow it year-round and see that it is coming to maturity in a very delightful way. Regarding youth development, I am distressed that we have cut services. I'm distressed that some of the federal funding that we did have is no longer here. Both of these populations are extremely vulnerable. Both of these populations, if they receive services now, will cost the state a great deal less in the long run. And I encourage you to creatively find more money for youth development, and I encourage you to continue to support the early learning programs as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Abigail Wells, and I am the Vibrant Future Coalition Director for Northwest Family Services. We serve youth in the Clackamas County area. First, I want to thank you for what you do and for taking into consideration our suggestions for ways to best help the youth and families in Oregon. I know that this year there are many valuable funding streams that are cut, and that there are therefore many vital services that are being cut. But another thing that I also know is that prevention works, and putting money towards prevention is going to help save money in the long run. In fact, recently in the substance abuse prevention dollar and cents, a cost benefits analysis done by SAMHSA, it shows effective school-based substance abuse prevention programming would offer state savings within 2 years, ranging from $36 million to $199 million in juvenile justice costs, $383 to $2.1 billion in education, $68 million to $360 million in health services. So these are all things that if the money is put towards prevention before when students get to a point that they need treatment and some of these more intensive services, it can save so much money in the long run. And same with education. Students can be in a seat in a school, but if they have other things going on at home where they're not able to learn, and even though they're present and filling a seat, they're not getting some of their needs met, you know, that money is ultimately going to help them in the long run. Our efforts range from drug and alcohol presentations in schools to working one-on-one and in small groups with youth, high-risk youth, community-wide prevention campaigns, environmental and policy strategies and change. And they're driven by local coalitions such as ours and programs such as PreventNet, which is primarily funded through the Youth Development Council. I'm here today with a student who I've worked with for the past 4 years, and she would like to share her experience with our prevention programs.
Thank you. Let's hear from you.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Mioli Prado, and I am a senior at Rex Putnam High School. I come from a very large Hispanic family, and due to my grandfather getting sick, we had to move down to Mexico with my mother to take care of him. But because school wasn't really an option for us there, we had to move back up here with my dad. At a very young age, we were separated from my mom, and it was a big change to move back here. We set our minds to become someone that could support our families and make a difference so we wouldn't have to go through difficult times like my parents had to. Through Vibrant Future Coalitions and PreventNet programs, I've been able to get the support I've needed throughout my high school experience. I've been able to meet new people, learn a lot from them, and they have promoted a healthy lifestyle that I've been able to follow. I've learned about teamwork through ropes courses activities we've done, and experience to have my voice heard through testifying to the county commissioners. I learned a lot about how to make a difference in our community through these programs. I have been able to be part of a unity club at Putnam, and is guided by Vibrant Future Coalition and PreventNet, and is a group where I know I can get help and feel safe in any situation. if prevention programs didn't exist, I don't really think I'd be so set on the next plans I have, which is college. I have a job now, and I've learned skills from all the programs that I've participated in with them. Because of these reasons and more, I would like to ask you to recommend increasing or at least maintain the Youth Development Council budget at the current service level funding, so programs such as these can remain helping others just like they have helped me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all of you. Now we are Ashley, Mary Ellen, and Pedro.
And on deck will be, I believe, it's Arnie Soto, Eva Pignotti, and Jennifer Richter.
Go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ashley Oakley, and I do program evaluation for Head Start and Early Head Start programs at the Native American Youth and Family Center, or NAYA. I am also a member of the Coalition of Communities of Color, which is an alliance of 19 culturally specific organizations, including the Latino Network, APANO, and my organization, NAYA. The organizations fully support investments in culturally specific early learning and also the Early Childhood Equity Innovation Fund. The state needs to continue to invest in the early learning system as a key strategy for achieving equitable outcomes. In 2014, 36.5% of babies born in Oregon were children of color, but continue to be underrepresented in the state-funded programs. We need to diversify our funding of programs to accurately reflect our growing diverse population. Culturally specific organizations with successful track records can bridge the gap for underserved children of color. I have a couple of quotes from a parent who couldn't make it today. And also a teacher of our early learning program. We see so many of our Native kids in special education early on, and it's not because our kids can't learn, it's because mainstream schools don't want to teach them in the ways that resonate with them. At NAYA, parents learn the skills they need to advocate for their children and to help them be successful. And this is the one from the teacher. Because we are Native, the ways we learn are different. Native-specific teaching helps kids by finding ways to teach that work for their learning styles. We don't give up on a kid who's struggling in order to focus on the kids who are excelling. We have the whole group work together to pick up the kids who are struggling and bring them in to support them. This value helps our kids to advocate for themselves and their personal learning standard styles and to understand that it's normal to learn differently. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, my name is and members of the committee. My name is Marilyn Glynn. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries. I want to say first that I'm grateful for your past support of the early learning system. Relief nurseries, as you know, are private nonprofits that serve the most vulnerable young children and families, where our families have an average of 16 risk factors. We serve more than 3,000 children and families every year with a combination of therapeutic early childhood program, home visiting, parenting education, respite, and other supports as needed. We've grown by leaps and bounds over the last several years. There are now 31 locations throughout the state of Oregon, with sites all over the place. But the need is still there. Every relief nursery has a waiting list, and there are more communities that would like to open relief nurseries as well. Last year, DHS reported that 11,191 children went into foster care. That's 11,191 too many. Relief nurseries can help with that. We have a proven record of success in keeping kids out of foster care. 98% of the children who have been in relief nurseries for more than 6 months have no further reports of abuse and neglect and no further out-of-home placements. Parents report better family interactions, more reading with their children, less use of the emergency department and for routine care, and even increased employment. And as you know, relief nurseries are required by statute to raise 25% of what we receive in government funding from the community. We do this and even more, leveraging $16 million in local contributions and $12 million in other funds. So we more than double what you give us every biennium. But the best voice I can think of to talk for relief nurseries is Pedro Gomez.
Please, Pedro.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Pedro Gomez. I'm proud to speak in front of you today and share a little story on how Family Building Blocks has made me a better father and a better person. I was abused by a babysitter when I was young, and I blame my parents. That is when I felt they let me down. I also feel that they could have protected me better. My dad expected me to be macho and be the man of the house. I felt I was never good enough in my father's eyes. I joined a gang when I was 12 because I was looking for an escape, a place to belong, a place to feel loved. That didn't last long. The gang life wasn't for me. Too many rules. I had my first child when I was 14. I was terrified of being a teen dad and really had no idea what I was doing. When I was a struggling single dad, family building blocks were there. They gave me diapers, clothes, food, and helped me connect with transportation and other resources, but most of all, guidance. For a very brief moment in those early years, my kids were removed from my care when I relapsed and started doing drugs. Family building blocks was there, and the first call that I made when my kids got taken away. They were there for me. Excuse me. They were there for me. They provided surprise visits with my children, helped me regain custody. They helped me realize that I was all my children had, that it was up to me to provide for them and give them a better childhood than I had, to break the cycle. I was asked recently, what would your life look like if you had never met family building blocks? I can only say, honestly say, if it wasn't for family building blocks, I wouldn't have my children with me. Family building blocks has always believed in me. Never once have I felt judged. In fact, my first family building blocks home visitor told me nearly 10 years ago, you one day you'll have a story to share with the community. Be that role model. And look where I am today at our beautiful state capitol. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keep being a great dad.
Thanks.
Is it Janice Soto, Eva Hignoth, and Jennifer Richter?
Welcome, ladies.
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith Warner, and members of the committee. My name is Annie Soto, and I am the Executive Director of Head Start of Blaine County, serving over 1,000 children and families in a two-generation approach that supports both the child's education and being ready to learn, as well as the services to support the success of the family, as well as financial stability. We have about 289 staff. 37% of those people are past or current Head Start parents. I think the number actually has gone up this year. In 1988, the Oregon legislature implemented a state-funded pre-K program that was a look-alike to the federal Head Start program, using the research and wisdom of the years of service there to put a program together that's two sources of funding and one program. In many of our smaller rural communities, because there is an Oregon pre-K, if not an Oregon pre-K Head Start, in every one of our counties, and that is really part of the beauty that the frontier communities can have that same level of service, same standards as any larger program. Currently, we have lost about 50% of our bachelor-level teachers over the last 2 years to competitive programs such as the full-day kindergarten and preschool promise and other quality programs. We're asking for $15 million to increase teacher pay to be competitive with other state-funded programs, and to hold on to the staff who have worked for us for over 35 years providing services in some of our rural areas. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Eva Pignotti, and I'm representing today the Oregon Head Start Association and my Head Start program, Community Action Head Start of Marion and Polk Counties. We serve 793 preschool children in both rural and urban settings, with classrooms in the Almsville area, serving children from Mill City, Lyons, Gates, Mahama, Staten, Almsville, and Turner. We're in Woodburn, Dallas, and Independence, in numerous locations in Salem. What makes Head Start different than typical preschool is our value that to best support a child, you also support their parent.
Yes.
And that is in developing their skills as a parent and also developing their ability to financially support their family and be self-sufficient. Head Start programs are operating a number of innovative parent training, parent developmental programs. We have a program where a parent is hired and works for us for 6 months in order to get something on their resume, gain some skills, make a little bit of money, and then they have become more employable. We've put about 25 parents through that program in our program, and every Head Start program has some scaffolded program to help parents develop their skills. We think it's very important. We collaborate with the other early learning programs and with our early learning hub, and I sit on the Preschool Promise Steering Committee for the Marion and Polk Hub. It's critical for us that all Head Start programs in Oregon maintain their full funding and do not face any cuts, and that is our ask today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. My name is Jen Richter. I'm the Early Learning Program Administrator for Yamhill CCO, which is our backbone organization in Yamhill County. I'm submitting testimony in support of continuing service level funding for many early learning programs that support healthy families and ensure kids arrive at school ready to succeed. The Yamhill Early Learning Hub, like all hubs, helps to extend the effectiveness of the state's investments in early learning by reducing duplication of services and allowing complementary services to be embedded in ways that they wouldn't otherwise work together without the hubs. For example, in Yamhill County, several community partners have come together under the umbrella of the hub to address challenges in Sheridan, where over 20% of the population lives under the poverty level. Only a third of the kids by third grade are reading at grade level, and only 40% are not graduating. Sorry, I got that wrong. A full 40% are not graduating. 60% are graduating. 40% are not graduating on time from high school. We know that one of the strongest predictors of success in school and in life is socio-emotional skills, and that the stability of the family is really what drives those socio-emotional skills in the early years. And so we have started a family resource center in the West Valley. It is through Lutheran Community Services, has hired the coordinator, but it's embedded within the school district, and it's getting TA support from the CCO with funding through the hub. And we really feel like the hub, this is one of those examples where the hub really provides an opportunity for community partners that wouldn't necessarily work together normally to come together and address a common issue and support each other and fill in those gaps. So, about out of time. So, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much.
Joe and these two.
Okay. These are Joe Ferguson and who?
Emily
Squires and Dina Corso.
Push the buttons, people.
And then next up will be Sue Blum, Zanira Herrera, and Gabriela Guzman.
That's all?
Thank you for coming. Go ahead.
Sure. Senator Moreau, Co-Chair Senator Moreau, and Senator Representative Warner and the committee. My name is Joe Ferguson. I'm here representing the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association, or OJDA, which consists of all 36 counties in Oregon. We currently oppose the current reduction in the funds for the Youth Development Division, specifically for the juvenile crime prevention funding. The current proposal is to reduce this by approximately 19%, or $1.2 million, which is concerning on a continuum of services for juvenile justice. This fund was established in 1998 at $20 million. This current biennium, it is $6.9 million. It has continued to be reduced over those years. You had heard yesterday from the Youth Development Division that there are approximately 259,000 youth that are not being served because there's not enough funding. This would raise that to 260,000. About 1,000 additional youth would not be served annually. The program is proven successful. The 2013-15 biennium, there were a little over 3,000 kids served. 68% of those kids did not drop out from school. 51% decrease in chronic truancy. 43% decreased in academic failure, and 75% of those youth did not have a criminal referral in the 12 months following service. Investing in the JCP funding is good business and public policy, as data continually shows that it's an efficient use of resources, prevents at-risk youth from entering or penetrating farther into the juvenile justice system, and adds capacity to treat at-risk youth in the community and yields fewer victims. The YDC also shared with you some costs yesterday, and so if you look at the continuum of prevention, it costs approximately $1.60 a day for youth at prevention, all the way up to the Oregon Youth Authority correctional beds, it's $400 a day. So we need that continuum. We need funding both for prevention and all the way through the funding for the Oregon Youth Authority. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, committee members. My name is Emily Squires. I work for SMRC, which is an acronym that stands for the Sexual and Gender Minority Youth Resource Center. It's quite a mouthful. We're up in SMRC. I work with queer and trans youth throughout the Portland metro area and across the state, and I am just here to advocate on behalf of my constituency, which are slightly older than some of the other folks we've heard talking today, not so much early learners, but people who are in school. And I would like us to keep in mind, as we're talking about funding and priorities, thinking about the current climate that our youth in schools are facing right now. Just last week at Grant High School, which is a school that is touted and held up as an example of being queer and trans inclusive, there was some incredibly transphobic graffiti written on the bathroom wall that directly cited violence towards queer and trans youth. I'm not going to repeat it. And I just want us to remember what are the ways that we as adults can show up and support young people right now. And one of those ways is putting our money where we say our values are. And so I strongly urge you to support funding the YDC. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs Monroe and Smith-Warner and members of the committee. My name is Dina Corso. I'm the Juvenile Services Division Director for Multnomah County's Department of Community Justice. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today regarding the Youth Development Division's Juvenile Crime Prevention, or JCP, funding. JCP prevention dollars fill a critical need for the youth in Multnomah County's juvenile justice system. The funds allow us to offer a specialized treatment program that provides comprehensive mental health and substance use disorder assessments and intensive outpatient family therapy for medium and high-risk justice-involved youth and their families. We cannot continue to provide these vital juvenile justice services for youth that currently get them without stable funding. We are particularly concerned because the Youth Development Division's estimated reduction impacts document dated February 1st actually shows a 24% reduction in JCP prevention funding in 2017-19 for Multnomah County compared to the current biennium. Investing in evidence-based services at the county level reduces juvenile crime and promotes positive youth development. For example, of the 133 youth that received treatment in our program in calendar years 2014 and 15, 74% did not have a new law violation referral within 12 months of program intake, 74% made academic progress during treatment, 69% increased employment readiness, and 80% showed improvement in problem-solving and emotional regulation skills. Youth of color who are overrepresented in the juvenile justice system often have difficulty accessing culturally appropriate treatment services. Of the youth that we serve currently this biennium, 70% are youth of color that got clinical assessments. 67% of the youth receiving treatment were youth of color. Effectively serving youth in their communities prevents the need for more costly placement in out-of-home residential settings and youth correctional facilities. Of the youth that received treatment in 14 and 15, 94% were not placed in an Oregon Youth Authority residential placement, and 92% did not go to a youth correctional facility. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sue Bloom, Venera Herrera, and Gabrielle Guzman.
Next up will be Michael Lasher, Eva Rippenthal, and Dorothy Spence.
Notice the way we're doing this. See, He gets the first shot at the names and butchers them. Then I get the second shot and butcher them. So we apologize if we mispronounce your names. But thank you all for coming. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Smith, Warner, Monroe, and committee members. My name is Sue Bloom. I'm the Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Salem, Marion, and Polk Counties. Because of YDC funding, the Boys and Girls Clubs across the state have deepened the positive impact we have on the youth of our communities through workforce development, gang prevention and intervention, juvenile diversion through teen courts, and academic support and grade progression programs. Support of YDC budget is vital to continue to provide these high-yield programs to youth in Oregon. Our Oregon clubs serve over 68,000 youth per year, providing a positive place for youth to thrive with targeted programs to help our members build a positive vision for their future. Our clubs are there for our kids through thick and thin with services that support the whole child. We strive to meet their essential needs, provide a safe, fun, supportive environment to thrive, and build opportunities to explore college and career pathways and broaden their sense of what's possible beyond their neighborhood and their lives they see today. Specifically, one program, our T3 Training Teens for Tomorrow program, funded through YDC, is our teen workforce development program that was created here in Salem 7 years ago, and with YDC funding was scaled across the state to all of our clubs in 2014. T3 intentionally targets traditionally underserved youth for participation, including those with significant barriers to employment and academic success. Foster care youth, those who are gang involved or affected, pregnant or parenting teens, youth at serious risk of dropping out of school, youth who are homeless, economically disadvantaged, or from single-parent families, and youth with juvenile crime issues. Many of these youth are burdened with multiple barriers to their education and employment, including financial insecurity, low self-esteem, behavior delinquency, lack of supervision, and lack of responsibility. T3 helps close the achievement gap for these underserved youth by supporting academic success, building 21st century skill sets, helping them find employment, developing their own social capital, and seek higher education and career-based training through case management. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Committee members, my name is Yanira Herrera, and I am the Career Readiness Specialist for the Boys and Girls Club T3 Training Teens for Tomorrow. In T3, we focus on academic success, career readiness, and career exploration. Or in other words, we stand alongside our youth to create a bridge that closes the achievement gap and ensures that our youth graduate high school, go to college, the trades, or into the workforce per the personal plan. We provide our teens with certified teachers to tutor them, academic and career mentoring, job shadows, industry tours, college visits, internships, and any other form of exposure to post-secondary education that we can make happen, because we know the importance of exposure to need, the importance of exposure needed for dropout prevention. You see, I grew up in Salem, Oregon. I come from a low-income household where both my parents were working hard to support my family. I am one of six children, all of which were married and or had children by the age of 18. I was the oldest in my family to marry at the age of 19. My parents didn't think I would graduate high school, and honestly, they didn't care. By the time they realized I was serious about graduating high school and pursuing a post-secondary education, they told me no. So I told them I was going either way. But I would have never had the courage to stand my ground if it wasn't for T3. T3 taught me self-advocacy so that things like this didn't happen again. Staff stood by my side, even when my biological family didn't. They taught me that it's okay to be different, that people don't have to live up to the negative expectations or to the statistics. And my success story isn't the only one. Every day, I have the privilege of working with youth whose barriers are truly astonishing. And thanks to grants like these, at the end of their senior year, I have the opportunity to walk along, to see them walk stage and prove that they're not a statistic either. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, members of the chair and co-chair. I am Gabriel Guzman, a member of the Boys and Girls Club. I've been a member for 4 years. The TAGS program, which runs through this fund, the program is one-on-one mentoring with the club staff for 6 months, two times a week for an hour for each session. We usually talked about grades, and how I can make my day better and how to improve on it. The mentoring gave me more confidence as a person and helped me achieve my academic standard and be here today. With the mentoring, we had everyone who's gone through it has been better. They are all still in school and have not dropped out. With the mentoring, we did some trips to the BSU college campus to learn about scholarships, and we toured the facilities, and it was a really fun experience and good time. Without this grant, we couldn't be able to run this program that's helped so many youth in the past years achieve their dreams and goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michael Lasher, Eva Ripito, and Dorothy Spence.
Since I'm here every day, I'm happy to move to the bottom of the list, Eva Ripito.
Okay.
And then add Heidi Kale, maybe?
Heidi Cab.
Cab? Not sure. Kale. I'm sorry.
Hello, good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Monroe, Representative Smith-Warmer, members of the committee. My name is Michael Lasher. I am the superintendent of the Douglas Education Service District, centered in Roseburg, Oregon. And my purpose today is to speak to you in support of the Early Learning Division budget and their programs. First, I'd like to thank you for all that you have done in funding early education in Douglas County and throughout the state. I'd like to tell you that prior to the Early Learning Division, school districts in Douglas County did not see and embrace early learning as their responsibility. That has changed. Prior to the Early Learning Division, K-12, child services, and social service agencies were not working together as effectively as they are today. Things have changed because of the Early Learning Division. Prior to the preschool promise, Douglas County had only 3 school districts that had preschools. Now we have 9. The investments in the Early Learning Division, we've been able to leverage more than $500,000 from the Ford Family Foundation and the Oregon Community Foundation to also support early learning in our region. More children, especially those with the greatest need and at the greatest risk, are being served because of the work of the Early Learning Division and what they are helping us do. Without the Early Learning Division, there would be no venue, there would be no system, no structure for dialogue, coordination, there would not be a focus for the efforts that we are undertaking. Their work has helped us greatly in Douglas County. Every person, every adult, every parent wants the best for their children, and because of the work of the leaders and the staff at the ELD and what their programs are doing, like Preschool Promise, more of Oregon's most vulnerable children will come to school ready to learn and will have a greater opportunity for success. I really urge you to continue to fund the work of the ELD and the programs. It's doing good work not only in Douglas County but around the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dorothy Spence. I'm the hub director of the Northwest Early Learning Hub that serves Clatsop, Tillamook, and Columbia counties. I'm here today to testify in support of continued funding for critical early learning programs that support thriving families and ensure children are ready to succeed in kindergarten. As some of you may know, in the 2015 session, I had the honor to work as the deputy legislative director for Speaker Kotek, working specifically to support the Speaker and members of the House on education and early learning policy and budget development. Then and now, we heard in the research, we know that research tells us that a child's brain develops more in the first 5 years of life than at any other time, creating the foundation for all future learning and development. What I couldn't fully appreciate then, and what I am humbled to witness now, is the impact these investments in early learning have made in a very short term on a community's experience and a family's life.
For example, a parent of a three-year-old in a preschool promise program in St. Helens shared with me recently that her son can sing and identify each letter of the alphabet, knows most of the sounds each letter makes, and easily count to 10. Most importantly, his love of learning has become evident in his everyday life. I know he is in a safe, well-controlled environment with a staff 100% dedicated to each of these kids. The parent also shared how the Preschool Promise program has supported her family to be self-sustainable. She told me that if I were paying daycare for the hours I were working, I'd be paying close to half of my take-home pay every month. After a mortgage of $520, electric bill, water, car insurance, I wouldn't have anything left to support my family with food, gas, groceries, or other needs of the family. This is just one of the stories I've been able to hear about in my community and the impact that early learning investments have made. Many of the folks that I work with would love to be here today to tell their stories directly, and I promise to share their voices and experiences on behalf of them. For many of them, they feel more than just a statistic or a return on investment to be realized. Their everyday lives have been changed because of these investments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and members of the committee. My name is Heidi Cow and I'm a resident of Southwest Portland. I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon Center for Christian Voices. We believe that funding both high-quality preschool for low-income children and early intervention and early childhood special education should be priorities in Oregon. The Oregon Center for Christian Voices advocates for people whose voices are not heard. This includes children, especially children from low-income families or children with special needs. A strong argument can be made for funding early childhood education. Neuroscience research indicates that early childhood is the optimal time to invest in the lives of our children, and that this investment can yield many long-term benefits, including improvements in educational outcomes, employment, and health. Therefore, the cost of these programs can be justified by the huge benefits for the students who participate and the long-term benefits for us as a society. However, I think an even stronger argument for funding early childhood education is that how we care for our children says who we are as a society. As a mother of three children, my heart breaks for the children whose opportunities are limited for them for even before they are born. The sad fact of life in the U.S. today is that the financial security of a child's family is a huge indicator in whether or not they are receiving the ideal exposure to language and other educational opportunities that kids need to thrive. For the 20% of Oregon children living in poverty, early childhood experiences are limited as parents juggle multiple jobs and are left with few child care options. Scripture says, "How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's good and sees a brother in need and yet refuses to help?" If we are not willing to use our worldly goods to help the most innocent and vulnerable members of our society, then we have lost our moral compass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ashley Oakley, Martha Brooks, and Marilee Haas.
And following on deck then is Jessica Lagunas, David DiMatteo, and Daniel Delgado.
I am already gone, so you can call me.
Okay. Who else shall I take? Elise Argutha. Go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, members of the committee, my name is Martha Brooks. I'm the state director of Fight Crime Invest in Kids and Ready Nation, which are bipartisan nonprofit organizations of senior law enforcement officials and business leaders with more than 200 members in Oregon. I'm here on behalf of those members to ask you to, at a minimum, maintain present funding and investments to the early childhood programs within the Early Learning Division budget, such as Head Start, Oregon Pre-Kindergarten, Healthy Families Oregon, Preschool Promise, Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education, which is in the bigger education budget, Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Funds, Relief Nurseries, Hubs, and more. And should additional funding become available, we ask that you make early childhood one of your first choices for increased funding. A continued commitment to early intervention and childhood services will continue to build a strong and supportive early learning network. We all have a commitment to do the very best we can for our kids and make those investments go as far as possible. And why should we? Consider these facts. 80 to 90% of brain development happens between 0 and age 5. Nearly 50% of all child abuse and neglect cases happen between 0 and 5. Yearly, approximately 45,000 babies are born in Oregon, yet we serve less than 20% of those children eligible between 0 and 3 for home visiting. During the last biennium, we were able to get that amount back up for Healthy Families Oregon to just 2,000 levels after 15 years of cuts. Each year, we only serve approximately 25% of low-income children in pre-K. New parents struggle the most, and yet we wait until later. And yes, quality does count. It is critical. Why wait? We shouldn't. Returns on investment are the greatest in the early years. For every dollar invested, 3 to 17 is returned in the form of reduced crime, increased graduation rates, reduced special education and social services programs, and more. This is where we get the biggest bang for our buck. Without a foundation, kids stumble again and again on their path to graduation. They start kindergarten already behind other kids and never catch up. If you want Oregon to go from 48th in the nation, third from the bottom in graduation rates, this is where you should invest. If we don't get it right at the start, it costs more, takes longer, and sometimes the damage cannot be undone. What I can tell you is that investments early can solve a lot of social and emotional problems with kids, and investments early can pay back dividends, not just at age 3, 6, 18, or 21, but well into adulthood, reducing the ACEs risks. I worry about our children, and I know you do too.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Go ahead.
I didn't hear a buzzer.
Me neither.
I started late, so that's the reason.
He blew it.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Marilee Haas. I'm executive director of the Oregon Association for the Education of Young Children. I've submitted written testimony, so I'll be brief. Oregon AYC supports the Early Learning Grant and Age programs, as well as the budget for the Early Learning Division contained in Senate Bill 5516. Research has shown that wise investments in the early years pays off in greater success in school and life. Oregon has made wise investments in the past in our Oregon Head Start pre-kindergarten program, in professional development supports for early childhood educators, home visiting programs, and most recently the Early Learning Hubs and Preschool Promise program. We need to continue to fund those programs at an adequate level, including the roll-up for Preschool Promise to full biennium funding. Expanded investments in professional development for early childhood educators will support additional training and education for the current workforce to achieve professional standards of quality and to increase opportunities for professional development for those representing the cultural diversity of the young children of this state. What we have seen is the early childhood workforce much more closely matches the children of the state, but we do not have them yet at the educational levels that is needed to achieve quality, and we need to address that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Monroe, Chair Smith, Warner, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elvis Argueta, also known as Elvis. I'm a political organizer for SEIU Local 503, representing child care providers, also known as regulated subsidy providers, also known as family, friends, and neighbor providers in the employment-related daycare program. I'm here in support of SB 5516, which will support and help continue to fund vital programs like employment-related daycare and help low-income working families pay for child care at a time when Oregon ranks towards the bottom in child care affordability. ERDC provides support to Oregon families by making sure that child care is not a barrier on the path to stable employment. Oregon is currently only serving 16% of the eligible families in the ERDC. This program is simply not funded at the level it should be. One area of the agency budget that we have concerns about is withholding of a transfer of $6.1 million to the Department of Human Services from the Early Learning Division. This withholding, we believe, would result in a reduction of families being served by the program and prevent access to the program for families currently waiting on the reservation list. We acknowledge that shift in funds is a result of a new federal regulation that were unfunded, but it does highlight the need for more and substantial investments in the rearing of Oregon's children from birth to graduation. Taking money from one place to backfill another is not an effective way of funding an important program that so many families in Oregon rely on. The legislature needs to raise revenue in order to build a system that sets the bar in services for children and doesn't pit programs against each other, but rather complements each other in roles in children's development. As someone who was born and raised in a low-income community of Compton, California, I know firsthand that we don't want to end up with a child care system equivalent of a wish sandwich, which is wishing that your two slices of bread and pancake syrup were more substantive. We need to raise revenue to continue forward progression, especially when we're dead last in the nation in corporate taxes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to hear from Jessica Lagunas, David DiMatteo, and Daniel Delgado.
The next up will be Ann Craig, and then there are four or five folks from if you could pick a couple folks from that organization, then we can almost get through. That would be very helpful.
Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jessica Lagunas. I work at Latino Network as the Asset Culture Coordinator, overlooking the Studio Latino After School Program and the Ballet Folklorico Program. Latino Network mission is to positively transform the lives of the Latino youth, families, and community. I'm here to give testimony from one of the parents of my program. Her name is Maritza Alaniz, and she said that I'm a mother of three girls, and for the last 2 years, they have been participating in Latino Network by Ballet Folklorico Corazones Alegres. I like having my daughters in this program because it gives them the opportunity to know the roots. Ballet Folklorico is an expressive cultural art form and beautifully represents our country. It's through the dance that we are able to share a little bit with our community the cultural richness that Mexico holds and offers. When I see my daughters dance, I feel very proud of what they have learned, and I feel proud seeing their faces dance. In the last few years, I have noticed that they have better attitudes. They don't have to rush to get angry. They are learning self-determination, and Ballet Folklorico has given them the confidence to involve themselves in different social situations. Thanks to this program, I am able to see my daughters get professional training and to have the option to become dancers and develop an artistic discipline that will have a lasting impact, knowing that the dance and the memories will accompany them for a lifetime. Thank you to YDC, who has supported this program among other youth programs at Latino Network, and I hope you continue to offer your support that gives my family the opportunity to see the growth and formation of my daughter. Please consider my thoughts and goals for the growth and development of my daughters for programs like this.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, co-chairs, council members. My name is David DiMatteo. I am the Family Stability Programs Manager at Latino Network, an organization that focuses on education and wraparound services for youth and families. One of the programs I manage is Cambio Cafe, a youth entrepreneurship and workforce development program teaching young people about microenterprise and soft skills and employment. This program provides critical support to young people so that they may successfully engage with the workforce, building resumes and creating opportunities for success in employment and in school. Our program provides mentorship and builds confidence. Last April, at the Gresham Saturday Market, we launched Palomitas Kettle Corn, a youth-led microenterprise. One of the shining moments was when the mother of one of our participants came to me and tearfully thanked me for the program. She described how her daughter, a high school freshman, had transformed before her eyes. She is excited to get up in the morning now. She loves working at the market. She never used to want to even get out of bed. She's like a completely new person. She's happy, and we are getting along again. This program is funded by the YDC through a youth innovation grant. We have expanded this program recently to include a cafe in the Gresham City Hall lobby with our grand opening the first week of April. I urge you all to maintain funding for the YDC so we can continue to support these young people through these innovative programs, which are only made possible through this innovation grant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Daniel, and I've come to testify for the program of Cambio Cafe by Latino Network. I am one of the 10 youth that took this program that taught us how to lead, how to basically run a business, a small business. At first, it was just the money that got us into it, but as we slowly started learning the knowledge, we got more in depth with it. We got along greatly, and then when we launched the Palomitas part of it, I really enjoyed it. It taught me how much stress is on CEOs and people that run their own programs and stuff. And as I started opening my eyes to that, engaging with other people, I learned that we should always be given 100% at our work, and I feel like that would help out our economy here in Oregon. I feel that it would make a difference if people knew the stress, the responsibilities that it took to run a business. They would have more respect for each other. They would be very productive, putting in their 100%. And that's what I'm going to be doing when I get a job in the summer. I'm going to be putting my 100% because I don't want to waste any time. I want to make my good money. I want to keep that business running right. And that's why I ask you guys to keep funding the YDC, because it has helped me, it has changed my mindset, and I hope to be more productive in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Good testimony. Last panel is going to be Ann Craig and two folks from Todos Juntos.
Good morning. My name is Ann Craig. I'm the executive director of Jackson Street Youth Services that serves homeless and at-risk youth in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. I am asking today, advocating to maintain the Youth Development Council budget at its current service level. And to increase the funding, hopefully in the future, because it still has a ways to go. YDC funds have targeted and made a major difference for disconnected youth who are often not on track to graduate from high school, access employment, or live productive lives. These YDC-funded programs like ours use best practices proven for desired outcomes, including community collaboration, which is key to effectively serving these youth. One youth we served, Nick, 17-year-old youth from Lynn County, he was homeless, living from couch to couch in his community. His school reached out to us when his grades started to slip his senior year. He couldn't imagine what was going to happen after he graduated high school. We worked with him and the school to make a plan for stable housing, to help him to get a job, and to be able to look forward to what will happen once he graduates high school, of which he picked his grades back up and was able to graduate on time with his class. Next, just an example of the many youth we've been able to support because of the YDC grant. Last year, we provided support to over 150 youth like Nick. 100% of those who needed emergency shelter, we were able to engage with the school while they were with us. Our organization uses the YDC funds and more than doubles it with the support of the community to provide these programs. The youth we serve are at a great disadvantage without our programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and committee members, good morning. My name is Albert Garcia. I work for Todos Juntos and serve as a prevention specialist and PreventNet site coordinator at Molalla River Middle School. I'm here to advocate for maintaining the current level of funding for the Youth Development Council. I've been facilitating after-school activities, prevention interventions, and gender-specific groups for over 5 years. And the positive impact we've had on kids, specifically the at-risk youth, is overwhelming. The activities and structure we provide give these teens positive and productive outlets and help to answer many of the questions and challenges about life that occupy their minds. They also help to keep them from succumbing to the negative pressures of their peers. One of the programs we've implemented in our school that highlights a reduction in deviant behavior is our in-school diversion program. So instead of giving an automatic suspension to a student who's committed an offense, which only gives them a welcome day off, we offer a more productive means of punishment, such as community service, empathy training, or self-reflective essays. So in the last year, the number of serious incidents, suspensions, and school days missed have been significantly reduced. But most importantly, the Youth Development Council and its programs are so beneficial to the success of these kids because of the life skills and positive character traits that we teach that are not always provided through the normal school requirements. Most kids at this time in their lives have too much time on their hands outside of school, and they often succumb to the negative pressures of their peers. The programs offered by us give them a productive way to spend that time and a means to stay on the right path while providing a strong foundation to become productive members of society. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, co-chairs Monroe and Smith-Warner and members of the committee. I would just like to agree with Albert in his asking for the current level of YDC funding to be approved. We, along with Albert, I'm a site coordinator. I'm in Sandy, Oregon, and I just want to give you just a story of one student. I run a summer program, and he was able to come to that summer program. These are fifth graders coming over to the sixth grade in the fall. These are teacher referred youth who are at risk and not going to probably slide into middle school like maybe some others could. He came during the summer, had a lot of problems with pro-social skills and making friends. But after summer, he was able to get into homework club, and we got him hooked up with some of the teachers, and he's really making a lot of progress with regards to his grades. He came to me the other day holding a test that he had gotten an A on, very happy about that, and moved to his his F to a C in a class. I guess I just wanted to let you know that we leverage all sorts of community resources. This is just a list which you have, those of the resources that we use in the community to make the most of the money that we get. So it's these kind of successes that are being replicated all over the state of Oregon, and as a result of the YDC money. And thank you for caring and for prioritizing that success for our adolescent youth the state over. Thank
and you. Your name for the record?
Michelle Emery.
Thank
Sorry.
You very much, Michelle. Okay, Mr. Wilson, how are we going to clean this up?
We have two lobbyists in it signed up. If we can wait till next week, I think you know who you are. There are four other people. It would be nice to get through them since so they don't have to come back. Faith Clayton, Guadalupe Moreno, Drew Wininger, maybe, I'm not sure, and Danielle from Pacifico.
Come on up. Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. My name is Faith Clayton, and I'm here on behalf of Head Start as a parent who has a child in the program. It's hard to summarize in such a short time how invaluable this program has been to me, and to do it without emotion. As a first-time parent and a California transplant within the last 3 years in Oregon, I had no established community to support my family, and this program has helped me become an advocate for my child. I used to agonize about the idea of putting my child in preschool because he has speech difficulties and behavioral difficulties, and I wasn't sure who to entrust with him, but
this program has filled me with hope. I know that there are people out there who care about my child's future as much as I do, and everybody down to the bus driver thinks of my child, and they care for him. And I've become the representative for his school site on the policy council, and next week I'll begin taking the minutes, and today I'm here speaking to you. And those are all things I would have never thought that I could do, but the people in this program have supported me through everything. They have instilled in me a sense of hope for my future and for my family's future. And there are currently 1,777 children on the wait list for this program, and we would love to provide education to all of them. Yep. And in order to do that, we would support funding for an additional 400 slots. And if you can make a way, please make a way.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Danielle.
My mouse isn't reacting here. I'm sorry.
I'll take advantage of that opportunity. No, I won't.
You're on.
Good morning. My name is Danielle Basibico-Kogan, and I am thankful this morning to speak with you, co-chairs and members of the committee. I work for Children's Institute, but I'm here today as the parent of an autistic child. What I'd like to say is that I'm here to testify in support of early intervention and early childhood education, specifically because every child in this country deserves the opportunity to live their lives to the fullness of their potential and to the greatness of their abilities. And that also means children with developmental disabilities. Too often, children with developmental disabilities are treated as a burden. They're treated as if they're unteachable and as if they have no place in our society where they can be productive. But early intervention and early childhood special education provides our young children on the spectrum of disability with the places, the providers, the opportunities to live their lives to the fullness of their potential when they have teachers and providers who are going to provide them high quality early education, but also the services that they need. And as a fellow parent, I understand the feeling when my bus driver actually shows up in the morning and is ready to go and has Hamilton blasting because he knows that my son wants to listen to Alexander Hamilton all day. So I'm here because the funding for these programs are not only just, they're not nebulous, they're real. They change lives. And not only should we fund them, but we should increase the funding if it becomes available, if there's a magic pill like perhaps a state tax plan. I don't know. But please fund these programs and these services because they change lives. They are important. And they actually are proven scientific and research-based. When kids with disabilities have access to high-quality early education, they thrive. They're able to transition off and out of special education, and even if they're not, with those services and with those classes, they can live long, productive, and happy lives, and they should have the opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir.
Yes, good morning. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. My name is Drew Winninger. I'm here on behalf of Head Start program. We share a child, our son Rowan. You heard from Faith, and I just want to reiterate that I wouldn't even be the same parent if it weren't for the Head Start program. We were absolutely trying our best, and our son does have some speech problems, and it was nerve-wracking because he has such a huge heart, and he reaches out to everybody to be their friend, and it's been insanely difficult because even the children in our neighborhood push him away because of his speech. And all he's trying to do is play. So for us to get an opportunity to not only get him with children that would be around him and be willing to play with him, but to have adults and staff that his teacher specifically, I don't know how she has other students because it feels like all of her resources and time is going towards our son. The bus driver requests specific bus because he's actually a taller kid and the buses that they have are too small, so he has to sit in the very back of the bus away from all the other students. And so she requests a specific bus that has bigger seats so he can sit with other students. In every way, it really does feel like he is the center of their world, and that's helped us more, you know, with the free time that we have, accomplish more things so that when he's coming home, we have the energy and the time to devote to him, to be stronger parents, to give him more confidence so that when he goes to school, almost never ending. Though when you just give people this small start, and it doesn't seem so small, but it is, and it means a lot more than that. You know, it's just that little bit of time and that encouragement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all of you once again. When I came back to the Senate 10 years ago, I landed in this job. And as a lifelong educator, I've worked really hard to build up the early childhood programs and the youth programs. And I'm not willing to let them slide back. So I'm going to be doing all I can, and I know the other members of the committee here feel the same way, to make sure that these programs are not only maintained but built upon. And
was there a Guadalupe Marino available?
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
With that, Madam Co-Chair, tomorrow we will be hearing from people on the K-12 budget, and this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Okay. Surprise.
Went very well.